Oh, hi everyone.
Thank you. Yeah, right side up helps. Hi everyone. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show with the best up-to-date information we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business and hope you feel the same way about us. Would you like to produce a show? Of course you would. All of you have to do is email us at thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com to express your interest, and we will share with you all of the marketing opportunities you will get in exchange. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. With that, I welcome you to our show, The Business Behind Small Business. Whether you're selling or staying, we're here to remind you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. Sorry to say. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and
Tiffany Kao.
And we are sharing the more finite details of entrepreneurship, revealing the dots between startup and success. No one gets to a million without getting a little dirty. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it.
Let's go.
Let's do it. All right. So it is Super Bowl season.
Is it?
It is Super Bowl season for us in the financial sector. And no, I'm not talking about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift or who's going to be the halftime show guest, because let's face it, there are more important things than
that. Oh my God, now we're going to get canceled.
I know, right?
How dare you say something?
Please, Swifties, don't come for me, please. I'm talking about text. This time of year until March for businesses and April for, you know, the regular folk, it is a mad dash to make sure everyone has everything they need to keep the IRS happy. What do you do if you don't have that sacrificial lamb to offer to the gods of the IRS? no firstborn to sacrifice, you know, i.e. the right paperwork. Do you really want to be this stressed out every year? I don't think you do.
You really shouldn't be.
You really shouldn't
be. If you're in business, you'll learn that part of your job is also to make sure you pay just the right amount of liability that you need to.
Yeah. And people are going to be like, what does that mean? I don't know what liability means. I don't know. Because some people don't understand, and that's okay, because we're here for you. We are here for you. So I should hope you don't get a thrill from the uncertainty and the stress of whether or not you have all your paperwork and that everything is filed in correctly.
That's or terrible placement of words.
It really is, but you know what? It is what it is. We've got
that everything is correctly filed.
Wordsmith. English is my second language.
Hey, mine too. Anyways.
Well, now you took away my excuse card.
I was about to say, I went through ESL.
Damn it. So did I. Hey. ESL sisters. Today we've got a wonderful guest joining us, or rather we have two wonderful guests joining us. Today, Helene Weissman and Lori Roberts with PB Mayors. We're going to share a conversation with them about how best to prepare for tax season all year long.
So there is less panic.
Correct.
This time next year.
Yes. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and or after our podcast.
All right. Welcome to our show and thank you for being our guests. Would you please share with our audience a little about your background, both as CPAs and your experience within PB Mayors?
Great. I'll start. I'm Helene Weissman. I'm a partner at PB Mayors. I've been with PB Mayors or some iteration thereof for pretty much almost my whole career. And I've been doing this for over 35 years. I started when I was 4. PB Mayors is a top 100 CPA firm.
Wonderful.
And we do wealth management, normal CPA services, mergers and acquisitions. We stood up an investment bank within PB Mayors. We do the normal tax audit, and I'm sure I'm forgetting consulting, cyber consulting. We do pretty much anything you can think of.
Outsource controller.
Yeah. Pretty much anything you can think of that a CPA firm would do. And I'll let Lori introduce herself. Thank you. I'm a tax director with PB Mayers, and I also lead the firm's state and local tax efforts. So I spend a lot of time there. We work mainly with closely held businesses, you know, a couple of owners, a few owners, pass-through entities, do a lot with S-Corps. And we also have corporations and individuals and nonprofits and estates and trusts and, you know, all kinds of things like that. But I spend the bulk of my time, and Helene and I work together a lot on many clients. She handles the assurance piece and the audits, and I take care of all the tax fun.
I got so much knowledge in one frame.
I know. I'm excited.
We aim to please.
We contain it all. Okay, so first question. Tell us your thoughts on a yearly income tax projection and what benefit you think that could be for a business forecasting what their estimated taxes could look like.
Awesome. I'll take this one because it's an easy one. it's always good. It's always good for companies to do a tax projection. And with the ever-changing landscape, taxes are, you know, there's so many different tax laws over the last 5 or so years. It's super important. And it's too late to do it after the end of the year. You have to do it before the end of the year. And for companies that are pass-through entities, it's especially important because it affects the owner's individual taxes also. So, and I'll let Lori add in anything that she might like to add on that. And I wouldn't say just once a year. I would say not a continuous, don't be preoccupied with it. You want to be, you know, focus more on growing the business, but to have an awareness of how the business is doing and how that might impact the tax bill as it comes due and what's going to happen is always a very good strategic business plan. And if something happens during the year that you think is important, please come to your CPA then. Don't wait till the end of the year and say, oh, by the way, I did this 9 months ago.
After the fact.
Yeah, because it's as a matter of fact, it's even better to ask before you do it than to even right. say, hey, I did this last week. If to ask, hey, I'm going to do this, what do you think of that?
So this is not a circumstance of do it and then ask for permission later. This is definitely, you want to ask about right. it beforehand.
It does not inure to your benefit to ask permission later, because we're not the ones that are giving permission. It's the taxing authorities that are giving the permission, really. So
when's a good time? Like when, so it sounds like, I mean, when are you too small to do these projections at least once a year, or are you ever too small?
I would say it depends, because you know, we don't do it for free. It does run the clock and run the fees. Mm-hmm. But having that open dialogue with your provider and with your CPA, and, you know, kind of if you're on a steady pace. But the real key is if there are changes, if there's a new nuance, if you're going to be doing something different, if something's, you know, changing, you're going to be, you know, acquiring. That's the point that, whoa, should I be getting my CPA involved? Our larger clients that have more activity going on, you know, we'll do quarterly projections with them, or, you know, have some conversation. Do we need to look at it? So it just depends. It just depends on the circumstances. But changes, new things, that's maybe a good time to at least reach out with an email.
And for those who are doing it once a year, when's a good time, right? Because, you know, we have busy season, of course, and then you have the extension season. Like, when's a good time to actually have like maybe a set reoccurring every year appointment to sit down with your CPA without, you know,
landing? We do a lot of tax planning work late November, December. That way there's still a little bit of time in the year to take action and, you know, take certain steps to manage, you know, do, you know, either cut the tax bill or, hey, yeah, we're going to have to pay the tax. As Helene said, often if you get past December 31st, there's not much you can do to manage that taxable income.
Oh, I agree. And
even earlier is okay. Once we get past the October 15th filing deadline, we're a lot less crazed, you know, and on our end. So, you know, that's always, you know, a good time to reach out and just say, hey, I want to do this, so we can get you on the calendar. Or your CPA can get you.
And it helps,
and it helps to have good numbers to work with.
Yeah. And I would add to that, that we like to have a conversation with our clients usually in September, beginning of October. So that way they can have their continuing conversation with the CPA. So I would also add that if you have a bookkeeper or a bookkeeping firm, maybe have a conversation with them in September, October, about what your books are looking like so that you can have a more informed conversation with your CPA. Or if you don't have a bookkeeping firm and need a bookkeeping firm, I would say bring them in September so that your books can look like something that your CPA is can look at. Because if you don't have anything for them, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of need to have books, data for the CPA to be able to move from there. So that's just my two cents.
Correct. And one of my retired partners used to say, owing taxes isn't bad. Being surprised you owe taxes is bad.
Nobody likes a surprise.
Right. So, you know, if it's managed for you, like, yeah. We always used to jokingly say our fondest wish is to tell all of our clients on April 15th that they owe $1 million. Cause that means they earn, you know, $3 million mm-hmm. that year. And as long as they're not surprised, that's okay. But nobody likes to get told, you know, on April 14th that they owe a bunch of money they weren't expecting to pay. So, or March 14th, if it's a corporation.
Exactly. So in saying that, do you find clients utilizing retirement accounts or plans as ways to reduce their taxable income?
Oh, yes. However, it should be known that if a business has employees and they want to really max out retirement plans, they have to develop a plan that includes those employees. So really urge them, if they're looking to do something, to be sure they talk with their CPA and a retirement plan specialist to, you know, look at the options, consider the costs, and then proceed from there. A lot of companies now have, you know, robust 401k and profit sharing plans. They're a good, employee retention tool and, you know, attracted to employees to help save for retirement. But there is a cost to the employer. So we do have some employer, you know, some clients who, okay, they haven't established the company plan. So they will do IRAs and things on the outside. But just know that if you have employees, you can't just do your own thing and leave them be. You have to include them. So talk to your tax advisor and, you know, we can put people with our retirement plan specialists when those questions come up or we make the recommendation.
Okay. So what are some other opportunities you can think of that a client can use to reduce their tax liability?
Well, one of the popular ones that, or some of the popular stuff, or I don't want to say popular, but common things when I'm working with clients with the tax planning is a lot of our clients, because their service providers are able to file taxes on the cash basis. So I encourage them, you know, get as many bills paid before the end of the year as you can, you know, make sure everything is paid, maybe even pay rent a couple of months in advance, whatever you can do that way. And if you're billing your clients, maybe slow down on sending those bills out a little bit. It may delay payment. If you receive the payment in January or February, then you're not going to, you know, report it for tax in the current year. Another thing is if you need equipment or you need, you know, a new vehicle or something like that would be beneficial and add to the profit of your business, December could be the time to buy it. You may benefit from a Section 179 write-off, writing it all off. But again, before you charge out and go to the dealer, and oh, I've had this happen, Helene, so many times. They go buy this great big vehicle and all excited because they're going to be able to write it off, when at the end of the day, they didn't have enough income to take the full benefit.
Oh, no.
And then they don't have money to pay other, you know, it's just not a good picture, but you can get a lot of good benefits that way. Considering the retirement plan. And this is where I say it all the time, and I might say it multiple times in this podcast. If you focus and dwell on the taxes, then you're going to go broke. Focus on increasing wealth, and the taxes will take care of themselves.
That's very wise.
Like I say, we many conversations over the years, you know, especially contractors, they want to buy that big truck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a perfect example of come to us before you buy the truck and ask
us. I think they're doing it out of context, right? They're not thinking about the brackets and like the tax and where they sit in that. And then they're going out and spending all this money, and then they may not even be able to take all the expense in the same year. It's just kind of a decision made. And not even just trust, you know, people. Oh, another great thing you hear about on social media all the time, Savannah, you've probably seen this. It's like, you know, go out and buy that luxury car.
Oh, yeah. And
write it off on your business. Like, why not? You know, go buy that, you know, I don't know.
And actually, this is hard to do without graphs and charts to show. But one of the things I know I am mindful of is I don't want to see a taxpayer or a client go down to zero taxable income 1 year, or, you know, that kind of thing, and then be way high the following year. I'd rather average that out. That way, in the first year, instead of being zero, if they can be paying some tax and take advantage of the lower tax rates and take advantage of their itemized deductions, in the long run, over the 2 years combined, they will pay less tax. That's where letting tax totally drive the bus, mm-hmm. you go broke.
Well, not to mention the fact that I think if you are trying to get financing and you're trying to show up with a, you know, they're like, let's see your tax return. And then you made no money according to your tax return, right?
Because
you're trying to drive those like tax liability down. Correct. So you're like, I want to show no income, so I paid no taxes. The bank's looking at your return going, we can't lend you because you just seem like you're not a stable company. You're not making money. Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yes. Yes.
And one other thing that Lori didn't mention, but she had it in her notes to mention, but I'll mention it is there are some potential credits out there, some pretty decent credits. There's R&D credits if you mm-hmm. qualify.
Yes.
And then there's land preservation credits, which that's for Virginia. Can't speak to any of the other states out there, but Virginia. So you can buy land preservation credits and basically pay your tax like maybe 90 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. And so, other states have some similar kind of things. And the law on the R&D is kind of in flux right now. So definitely talk to your tax advisor. But yes, those are.
And some states have great deductions for 529 plans for contributing to 529 plans also for your kids, your grandkids, for college, mm-hmm. you know, whomever. Yep. I don't think they even have to be related, do they?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Opportunities that way.
Yeah, I think it's tough because you mentioned a couple of times about flow through, like pass through entities, right? So those mm-hmm. single member LLC days, like the LLC, like the S corp, like they're still pass through. And I feel like sometimes owners forget that when you're a pass through, it's not just what you do on your business that matters, right? It kind of flows through your entire tax personal life as well.
That
really affect the taxes you pay.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Mm.
Awesome.
Okay. So can you tell us why businesses should know about capital gains tax? Explain the difference to our audience. What is the difference between ordinary income tax and capital gains?
Okay. All income is presumed to be taxed at ordinary rates unless it meets the capital gains treatment. Mm-hmm. In general, capital gains applies to an asset that you've held for more than 1 year. All right. Mm-hmm. So businesses actually see, unless they're in investments or deep into real estate or something like that, your general operating business is not too often going to have capital gains. Because if you sell that big truck and you make it, let's
Well, typically, if you sell that big truck, you're going to sell it for less than you paid for it. Okay. But let's say you have an asset that you're actually able to sell for more than you paid for it. Lucky you. Well, you can use capital gains for that piece that's over and above what you originally paid. Mm-hmm. But you're also going to have to do what we call recapture the depreciation, which means that piece of the gain that's above your carrying value in the books, that's going to be taxed at ordinary rates. So we don't see lots and lots or, you know, a lot of capital gain kind of activity going on in operating businesses. We will see it in real estate ventures mm-hmm. when they sell the property, sell the building. It's often at a gain. There'll be good capital gains there. And the capital gains versus ordinary tax rates, it's a different tax rate. So it could be as low as 0% if you have very low levels of income. For the, I would say, the average Joe, it's the federal rate's probably going to be about 15%. And if you're wealthier, you know, your income's above, I think I have it written here because it changes every year with inflation. But at any rate, for married filing joint, if your income's above $553,850, you're going to be taxed at 20%. What's that?
That's a big number. Like, who sat there and came up with this number that will be so easy to remember?
It's tied to inflation. It's these brackets, these rates are tied to inflation. So anyway, that would be 20%. And that's at the individual. A C corporation, a company that files Form 1120, there's no special capital gain rates. It's all taxed at the same rate.
Hmm. And I guess for S corps and partnerships, if it flows through. So if they have a brokerage account that they're buying and selling stuff at the corporate level, that would.
Yeah, I want to have a.
If they have like company investments, that's what gets a little bit more. Yeah.
Investments. Yeah. You know, it's mutual funds,
smaller businesses. You know, they're not quite there yet to have enough cash to go throw into an investment, typically.
Well, and that brings up a good point, Tiffany, because a business owner wants to be mindful if they're starting to look at having investments in the business. Mm-hmm. Might it be more appropriate to distribute that money? Because that, and this is a legal thing, and we're not lawyers, but.
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer, if you've got that as an asset of the business, then it's vulnerable to whatever lawsuit or claim might be made against the business. Mm. So, you know, excess cash, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, make some money on it. But I don't know that I would go in and start day trading or playing the markets.
And I work with a lot of nonprofits, and a lot of them do have robust investment accounts because they get stuff donated to them, or they have a policy where they use their excess cash to buy certain things. And, but even then, most of them have very specific investment policies. You know, mm-hmm. they can't get into anything crazy like Bitcoin, you know, mm-hmm. or that kind of thing. But they're nonprofits, so they're a little bit different than a small for-profit entity.
Yeah, because I was going to say, with a nonprofit, depending on how often the chairperson changes or the treasurer changes or whomever it is, it's constantly, not constantly changing, but it's changing. So that makes sense. But, you know, we I feel like speak to a lot of times, not just small, but, you know, micro businesses or very small businesses or startup businesses, but we also speak to the needs of businesses who are now like really exploding. Money's really coming in. They've moved on to a different bracket and they're like, oh crap, what do I do now? Like, I can't float like this anymore. Now I'm with the big boys. Now what do I do? So, you know, that's what we try
and
to.
And that's where. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that's where the pass-through entity treatments, partnerships or S corporations, give a lot of flexibility to business owners, because if they have excess cash, they can take the distribution as long as there's sufficient basis. It's not a taxable event. And then they can, you know, contribute money back in as they need to. Mm-hmm. And so it allows that flexibility that you don't have in C corporations. Right. You know, if the owners take a distribution, it's taxable dividends.
Well, so right. Laura, you said the B word, basis, which eludes every business owner, I feel like, of what in the world basis is. So I hate to put you on the spot, but is there any very simple way to help our listeners understand basis? Because
yes.
That is very applicable to a lot of business owner, and they don't understand that, which then they run into issues where they go off, spend a whole bunch of money, and then realize they don't have the basis to take any of it.
The simplest way to put that and how I explain it to clients is basis translates to what skin do you have in the game? Okay. And so for an S corporation, those are the contributions that the owner made to the business or what they paid for the stock. Or if they themselves have loaned money to the business, that will increase basis. If they guarantee a loan, that's not enough. For a partnership, it becomes more nuanced, a little bit more complex, but basically the same thing. What skin do they have in the game? What are they financially on the line for?
Or if you pay tax on the income that passed through to you, that gives you basis too, right?
Not the payment of the tax. Well, the taxable income. Yes, the taxable income on the K-1 will increase basis. A loss will decrease basis. Distributions decrease basis, contributions increase basis. So it is a nuanced thing. It is absolutely something to work through with the tax professional, the tax preparer. And it's gotten a lot more visible in the last few years as well with the IRS. They're requiring Form 7203 to be filed with returns to support, hey, there is basis for this distribution. You know, it's not going to be a taxable thing, or, oh yeah, it's taxable. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And to your point earlier, I mean, if you have a loss, I think kind of sort of piggybacking on what Tiffany said, if you have a loss that passes through to you, but you don't have basis, you can't deduct that loss. So you may be thinking, oh, this is awesome. I have this, you know, $100,000 loss in my company and it's going to pass through to me and I can deduct that and, you know, offset my other taxes. And no. You can't if you don't have basis.
So is that like what happens, like you were saying earlier, is, you know, a contractor, somebody you know, goes out, buys this big truck, thinking that there's this huge expense now that's going to knock their taxable income down to maybe a loss. And they're thinking, oh, I get a loss that's going to pass through. And then you're like, you can't. You don't have the basis for it. So it doesn't impact.
Whether it's the big truck or just the loss or the cumulative effect of maybe they bought the big truck, you know, whatever. Yeah, we see that. We see that a lot. We see it often enough.
Yeah.
Do you see that a lot for your clients? I'm sorry, you don't have basis for this.
Not to freak people out, but if you have a loss that you can't deduct in a particular year, you don't just lose it.
Right. That's
true. You do get to carry that loss forward. So
yes.
So I don't want to panic any of the listeners going, wait a minute.
You just can't take it in that year that you thought you can take
it. Correct.
You still get that surprise bill that you probably don't want to have when it comes in April.
Correct.
Right. we could riff on and on, but I've seen situations where somebody has a couple of businesses and one business has a big profit, and the other one has the loss, but that other one with the loss doesn't have the basis. They can't offset them until later on, you know. So again, we go back to that tax planning and that communication. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, part of where it becomes so important.
Great.
All right. You guys are making me feel like I should feel guilty about my luxury car, but I don't feel guilty.
No.
As long as you have basis to take it. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. As long as you have
what you want. Just understand
basis, your basis. And it helps your business. Go for it.
It helps my mental health. How about that?
There you go. That's important.
Exactly. And plus, I kind of needed a car. But anyway, so lots of businesses make donations to charities. And, you know, that is a great way to save on taxes. As well. But what are you guys' thoughts on donor advised funds? Or rather, how charitable deductions impact QBI for pass through entities?
Okay. So the QBI piece, the charitable deductions are not decreasing the qualified business income. Okay. Yes. There's a lot of confusion when that came out. when it comes to businesses making donations, it should really be, how does this fit in with the business's value set, where they are called to be profitable? We have clients that are very charitably minded and really want to, you know, in their hearts want to support charities, and they'll make charitable contributions. But for the pass-throughs, that charitable deduction passes through to the owner. So as a business strategy, if it's going to help the business, do it. If it's in your heart, do it. I would not be inclined to encourage somebody to be doing charitable contributions through their business. They could just as easily do it on their own or what have you. It just has to do with, you know, where are your values? Where is it important? What are you trying to do? Now, you mentioned the donor advised funds. Mm-hmm. Yes, a business can set up a donor advised funds, but I have not seen that. But we do see it a lot at the individual level. Hmm. So there again, it's a good strategy to work out that timing of income. We call it the big enchilada.
Yeah, big enchilada. Yeah.
You get that big swell of income in 1 year, maybe you sold the business, you know, something like that. Okay, set up that donor advised fund, and you got to do all this ahead of time. Put a big contribution in it. You'll reduce your taxable income in that year when you have plenty of taxable income. And then you can decide how you want to donate over future years. Mm-hmm. Another strategy with donor advised funds has to do with managing itemized deductions. And so donor advised funds became very popular with Tax Cuts and Jobs Act when the standard deduction limit doubled for a lot of people or went way up. They weren't able to take advantage of their charitable contributions from a tax perspective. They weren't getting beyond the threshold for itemized deductions. So in 1 year, they'll make a great big, huge contribution to a donor advised fund, take advantage of the deductions and, you know, that kind of thing, itemize on their individual return. And then in the next couple of years, they'll just use the standard deduction. And so they've really optimized their tax with that kind of a model. You know, like I say, a business could do the same thing, but I would ask them if they want to do that. I'd say, why? Tell me why. What's the business purpose?
That's fair.
Yeah.
C corps can take advantage of charitable deductions, but we don't see a lot. We don't see none, but I don't work with a ton of C corps. I mostly work with pass through entities or nonprofits.
So yes, we see it. Another thing too for businesses to be mindful of is a lot of times a charitable contribution may in actuality be a marketing expense. Mm. You know, if they're sponsoring, let's say, a race
or some kind of event,
and they've got their name plastered all over the place and they're handing out the, you know, the toys and the thrills and whatnot, that could, if you step back and look at the intent and the purpose and the benefits they're getting, that might be a marketing expense as opposed to a charitable contribution. And they'll get better overall traction with it because they're not going to run into some of the limitations you can with charitable contributions.
Okay. Oh, I feel like we just got a gold nugget there.
I know, we really did. So before we move on to the raw truth, are there any untruths or false information that you've come across time and time again that you would like to dispel? I know that we come across quite a bit when we see it on social media, but is there anything that keeps coming to you guys that you want to clear up?
We have tons. My personal favorite is, do not be paralyzed with fear if you get a notice from a taxing authority. They are not going to come and take you away and lock you up behind bars.
They're going to take you away.
But you need to respond. You need to respond to them. Ignoring them is not the way to go either. Because if you ignore them for long enough,
they may place
a lien on your bank account or show up at your office, to do something there. So everybody just, I feel like all these clients, even if they know they didn't do anything wrong, they get that letter from the IRS or, you know, the state taxing authority, and they just flip out and they call you and they're in a panic. So I would say
send the notice
to your accountant.
That's why you don't have a good CPA. You can just send it.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It doesn't help to call us up and go, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Send me the notice.
You need to see it.
Yeah. Lots of anxiety, I think, when you see that IRS envelope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they don't call. The IRS is not going to call you. They're not going to email you.
Never.
So if you get a call from somebody saying they're with the IRS, they're not.
Yeah.
Unless you called them and left them a message and asked them to call you back, then they will call you. But otherwise, you're not going to get a cold call from the IRS. So,
not out of the blue, not out of the blue. Yeah. What we have also been seeing, we're laughing about the notices, which is true, but what we've been seeing a lot of, and it's become a huge deal, and maybe other people have seen it in social media, but there are a lot of, I'll be blunt, fraudsters out there that have been promoting the employee retention tax credits.
Oh, yes.
And at first we were getting a lot of emails and a lot of calls from clients. Hey, I got this thing from so-and-so or, somebody I don't know about. And we're like, no, we checked with this when we did your tax return, or we'll check it, but I'm sorry, you don't qualify.
Right.
ERC,
these are
right?
fraudsters. Yeah. They're stretching the envelope. Some of them just filed fraudulent returns and took like a 20% take back. Mm-hmm. The IRS has issued several notices on this. This became such a boondoggle, such an issue for the IRS and so many taxpayers that they had to shut down the process in September.
Mm-hmm.
They actually created a process where taxpayers could reclaim their filings and say, no, I don't want to, or voluntarily, no, I shouldn't have, and pay the tax back. It was just a really, really serious issue. So I would say anything that like, oh, this seems good, too good to be true, or, oh, wow, I have seen it with the companies that come in and, oh, I'm sorry, I'm losing the term right now, the tax segregation studies.
Ah.
They can be very beneficial to somebody making a major investment in real estate and is going to place it into rental. Mm-hmm. But it may not make sense, or it may not be the right conclusion for somebody making a much smaller investment. So that's where synergizing and working with your tax advisor. And I would just say, don't just go do some tax thing that's going to, you think's going to save you a lot of money, because that person's not going to be signing your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be working with the people that it's going to be signing your tax return as preparer.
So I heard cost segregation study, like advisors, right? And then ERC advisors, right? That they come up and say, oh, it's basically like free money. That's what I hear online. Oh, it's free government money.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with the PPP when that, that first came out, and people were being encouraged to apply for that had no business really applying for it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with the employee retention credits. I mean, I had a client just the other day. We did employee retention credit. We helped them apply for their employee retention credit. And we looked at all the years where they could potentially be eligible. And we did it for the ones that they were eligible, all the quarters that they were eligible.
Right.
And they reached back out to me the other day and said, and asked, are there any others that I'm in? And I was like, no, we did it for you for this quarter and that quarter. And they were like, oh, well, we just got an email from, somebody, is exactly what we're talking about. And I thought there might be, an opportunity for us to, and it was like, nope.
Promise the moon, huh?
Please don't. And I'm glad they asked us instead of just, going ahead and doing it.
I forget the economist that said, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Ain't that
lies in taxes too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why it's so key for business owners, no matter what size you are, to start looking and establishing that relationship with a good CPA.
Yes.
Like somebody who you can call and ask, because as you get bigger, there are going to be a lot of these things, especially now with social media. There's all sorts of things out there that you need somebody you can trust to call and just verify and say, hey, did I miss something? Or is this a complete scam? Because they're in it with you, especially if you're licensed to do what you're supposed to do. They're in it with you, and they have a lot of skin in the game as well. right? So, you know, they're there to really back you up. So don't, free money is, it sounds too good to be true. It probably is.
Probably is. The amount of TikToks and Instagram videos or whatever, or Facebook links my husband sends me on all these ways he thinks that we could say, I'm like, please, please trust that I know what I'm doing. Please just stop sending me these ridiculous things. And yeah, anyway. So we
plus
have just
no contact, right? How much, yeah, how I mean, much tax advice can you give in under a minute?
Right. Well,
yeah,
see, it depends. Savannah, you have to do what I did, and you have to marry a CPA, because my husband doesn't send me any get rich quick schemes. And he does look at a lot of TikTok. He sends me recipes from TikTok that he wants to make. But he doesn't ever send me any get rich.
Yeah, he started switching over to recipes now because he got I was like, I need you to stop. Because like, these are people who are marketing themselves, right? Like there's so much more context that you're not understanding. And it's sad that people who don't really know much about it totally buy it hook, line, and sinker. And so, yes, I'm getting more recipes now too. So maybe he got the hint. We've got just a few minutes left.
I feel like we went into a little bit. Yeah, I feel like we went into a little bit of the raw truth there too with Elaine's story, which is great.
Yes. So, and we don't want to, we know that you guys have a hard stop. So why don't we take like just a few minutes to do a little bit of a little bit of the raw truth. But before we move on to the raw truth, we want you to be a part of our conversation and let us know what you want to hear. So send us questions or comments to our email, thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com, to ask questions related to our show or just let us know how much you love us. I love those. So we want to give you what you want to learn about. Send us an email and we will discuss it in a future episode. Now we're going to move on to the raw truth. And like I said, we have just a teeny bit of time to do a little bit of a roundtable of stories where we can share our own gritty experience with today's topic. So we want the listeners to know that success isn't easy, it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. And we hope you will hear our cautionary tales and learn from them. So do you have any cautionary tales to share with our listeners?
You want to take one? Well, I would simply reinforce if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. And the employee retention credit, we got so many emails when that was at Zenith, and I understand it's still happening. Those kind of issues are important. We talked about the basis, and I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with clients over the years. Yeah, you had the loss, or oh, you took all of that money out. You didn't have the basis because effectively you financed it with a loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a loan to the business. We're going to have to report that as taxable income or do some other gymnastics to mitigate it. So just so often it seems business owners, they're spending too much. They're either their personal spend, typically, they're getting ahead of themselves, and mm-hmm. it causes nasty tax repercussions.
Yeah.
So we have an elderly client who was scammed out of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh no.
By some of these fraudsters. And so I would advise anybody listening who has elderly parents, I mean, I'll speak personally. My mother is about to be 83 years old, and she is very much on the computer, on, you know, her phone, all that kind of stuff. And she and I have very frank discussions with her, like, Mom, you know, these are the scams that this is like the latest scam that's out there, and you need to be aware of this scam, you know. And I tell her, no one's ever going to, like I said earlier, no one from the IRS is ever going to call you. And, you know, I'm on top of what you owe. So if somebody calls you and tells you that you owe some, you know, ridiculous sum of money and they're going to throw you in jail, you know, that's not the case, you know. So I would say to all the listeners, you know, have frank conversations with the elderly people in your life who aren't as computer savvy, who aren't on social media like we are, and they, and, you know, we don't want them to get scammed. I mean, and just crazy stuff. I mean, you know, you hear about stuff where they're using AI to mimic
voices,
voices, and you get some call, you think it's your grandchild needing, you know, $10,000 because they're stuck in, you know, the Bahamas somewhere or whatever the case may be, you know, and I have conversations with, every time I hear about a new one, I tell my mother immediately.
Like, we had to take my mom's computer and smartphone away.
Oh my gosh.
She just, I mean, thankfully she never lost any money, but she just kept, she couldn't resist the clickbait.
Oh, oh gosh. Yeah.
She just couldn't resist the clickbait.
That's and dangerous. Just,
and so, so finally, thankfully, familiar. I wasn't the one that had to say this, but my brother's like, Mom, you can't have a computer anymore. Sorry.
Yeah.
And she
went, well, but that's what they had to do.
I think it's a great thing to note, though, the fact that, like, Helene and Lori, you kept saying it, which is so good. I think we just repeat it for our listeners, is the fact the IRS will mail you. They will not call you. They will not email you. So any of that, regardless of how official it sounds, because I've gotten official scam calls from FBI.
Right.
No matter how official it sounds, it doesn't matter, only by mail. So if you're not getting a piece of paper in the mail, you can ignore the fact that is any kind of scary repercussion or somebody will be at your door for your money, right? So well, mail
and
only.
I will add to that cautionary tale, although these two situations are not tax related. I almost got scammed twice. Once when my credit card called me about fraudulent charges. And when they asked me for my full credit card number to verify that they were talking to the right person, I was like, hang on, what do you mean by that? You should have my full credit card number. Because at first I was like, oh, okay, because banks do that all the time. You know, they call a credit card and be like, hey, was this charge you? And they knew what charges I had on my card, which was even scarier, but they didn't have my full card number. Mm-hmm. That was scary. And then another time when I was trying to sell something on Facebook Marketplace, a person said they were Venmoing me and the Venmo didn't go through. And then immediately I got an email from Venmo, like so-and-so Venmo, for me to refund the money. But I was like, I have a habit of always looking at email addresses, and the email address was like Venmo at blah, 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 whatever. And again, I mean, but that's just me and my habit of always looking at email. So twice I almost got scammed by people who were very, very savvy. So it doesn't just happen to people who are elderly. It could happen to somebody like me, middle-aged as well. So
it can, but we're at least reading and hearing about the things. And sometimes, you know, my mother is not listening to whatever you and I might be listening to about scams that are out there. So I mean, we tell our clients too, if they're, you know, older, we'll have discussions with them. And it's very, very sad, you know, to hear about a client who gets scammed out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the FBI is now involved, and they don't think that there's much that they can do for her.
No, it's true.
Yeah, especially if the money went overseas. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're done though. Well, and I will tell you, I mean, this isn't so much like a scam, but I think it happens to a lot of business owners. You've probably seen this too, Savannah, is when you when you start running payroll, you hire employees and you get your employer number, there's that one company that always sends you this very official looking envelope saying that you can order labor posters from them and all these handbooks and everything like that. And then tiny print on the bottom, it'll say that it's a private company, but they make it seem like it's from the government.
Yes,
you have to do this. And that happens to every single client I have who starts hiring people. They always get that letter and I just take it and throw it away because I was like, no, like you're not falling for that. And you're talking about, you know, $70 maybe, right? But still, it's like $70 for every business. And I had clients who, again, didn't ask permission and just went ahead and paid it. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yep.
So, yep.
Oh gosh. I feel like we could do a whole episode on scams alone. But we so appreciate the both of you, Helene and Lori, for being our guests and for sharing. And I know that if we could, we would spend hours talking to you, but eventually our listeners would.
We'll let you go back to tax season. And
Thank you.
So, thank you, ladies. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
It's my first podcast.
Oh, hey. You know,
and now you're ready for more.
Yes, absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wouldn't it be great to hear the sound of us promoting your business for you right here on our show? Am I excited enough for you? You can have that and more by producing a show or, hey, more shows. Just, you know, as many as you want. Just be our producer. You can have that and be more. No, you can have that and more.
You don't need to be more. You could also You're already be perfect as you are.
I mean, you really are. You could do that by producing a show or shows. All you have to do is email us at thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com to express your interest. We will share with you what you'll receive with your investment. For example, you'll have the opportunity to have your name and the name of your business mentioned multiple times during our show. Have your company logo on our social media along with details on how to get in touch with you, along with other marketing opportunities as well. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. All right. Now we're going to move on to our famous example. In each episode, we like to connect famous examples to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. We're revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons, our successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and or have inspired today's discussion. Take it away, Tiffany.
Okay, so today we're diving into the curious case of Richard Hatch. Mm. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Very long time.
Like 2000 long.
I know.
Who outwitted, outplayed, and outlasted his competitors on the first ever reality TV show called Survivor. In 2000, he won it all on the remote beaches of Borneo and then went home with a cool $1 million prize money. Mm-hmm. Well done, Richard Hatch. Mm-hmm. You did good. I remember that was such a big thing, Survivor, that
when it came out, right?
Like, yep. It was like the start of all reality TV.
Yeah.
So you have anything to blame? Blame Survivor. That's why we have reality TV.
That and Fear Factor.
Fear Factor. That was a big one.
They lost me when they were starting to like have spiders on their faces.
Do even people remember Joe Rogan on Fear Factor?
Or do you just think he's just a podcaster? Nay, my friend. He's more than that.
Go YouTube that. You can probably see him in the past. He looked very different though. Yeah. So here's the twist. Richard became a real life castaway, not on an island, but from the IRS, when he forgot one crucial survival skill, paying his taxes. Mm-hmm. You see, the reality star actually forgot to pay taxes on his $1 million windfall, which he did on TV, by the way.
I know. Like, I didn't do it.
Yep. As well as other income, including a stint as a radio host. Whoops, just forgot to include that on my W, you know, like my 1040, whatever. Right. So in 2006, Hatch found himself not on a beach, but rather in the courtroom facing tax evasion charges. So despite his ability to outmaneuver his opponent on Survivor, he could not outmaneuver the U.S. tax system. He was convicted, sentenced to prison, proving that when it comes to the IRS, there is no immunity idol to save you. Mm-mm. If you don't know what an immunity idol is, you would need to Google an episode of Survivor.
Yes. Such a great show.
So let that be a reminder that you may be doing all sorts of cool things like surviving the wild and basking in newfound fame, because he was famous for quite a minute after he won that show, being the first one. But don't you ever forget Uncle Sam. Oh, they know.
Mm-hmm.
People watch all this stuff now, all the time. If you do it online, somebody will be watching it.
My uncle, who is not scared of anything, and he said it all the time, I'm not scared of anyone or anything except for the IRS. He wasn't scared of the mafia coming after him. He could care less about zombies, but IRS kept him up at night.
Was it two things you can't avoid? Death and taxes?
Mm-hmm.
They'll come find you even after death.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could talk about the most famous scandal in history, which was Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi scheme, or literally any other scandal. But I thought I'd throw it back, like all the way back to the first scandal in history, because of course I am.
History.
Yes, this was courtesy of the Medici family.
Mm.
And hey, maybe we might connect old Burns to it as well. So the Medici family was an Italian banking and political dynasty that first consolidated power in the Republic of Florence under the patriarch Cosimo de' Medici during the first half of the 15th century. During this time, they formed the Medici Bank, which in Italian is the Banco Medici, which was the most respected bank in Europe during its prime. Some estimate that the Medici family was the wealthiest, and I would argue the most powerful family in Europe. The Medici family produced four popes of the Catholic Church, two queens of France, and a hereditary duchy title. You may have heard of Catherine de Medici, part of that family. The family owned substantial quantities of art, land, and gold, and they acquired political power throughout Italy and Europe. The banking and accounting professions were pioneered by the Medici Bank and family, and they were also the pioneers of through the development of the double entry system of tracking debits and credits or deposits and withdrawals, so modern bookkeeping. Oh, yeah. The bank used the work of Luca Bartolomeo.
Who is the founder of accounting?
De Pacioli.
Yeah, he's considered the founder of accounting. Yes, bookkeeping, right?
An Italian mathematician and Franciscan friar, who was also a collaborator with Leonardo da Vinci, who's referred to as the father of accounting and bookkeeping. And you know what? We still use the same framework that they created in the 1500s.
So. I was actually going, when I was rebranding my company, renaming it, I almost named it Luca. I really liked it.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, somebody else already had it. Dang it.
Oh, dang it.
They also Googled. They had the trademark. I'm like,
Aw, that's too bad.
Next time when that trademark runs out, it is mine.
What about Bart?
Bartolomeo.
Bartolomeo.
I don't know if that really quite is as promotes brand awareness as well as Luca accounting.
That's true. After almost 100 years of history, the bank shut down due to poor management, fraud, and basic lack of corporate governance.
It's too big and it can fail.
Yep. I would be remiss, though, to not mention the Medici family in modern times. So let's fast forward all the way to 1994, when Sonia Cohn founded Bank Medici AG as a private bank based in Vienna, Austria. So here I'm borrowing from a wonderful article that I sourced a lot of the information from, which will be in our show notes. So Sonia was Bank Medici's president and majority stakeholder, owning 75% of the shares. Its main institutional shareholder was Bank Austria Creditanstalt, Austria's largest banking group, which owned the balance of the shares. Sonia Cohn was also consultant to the Vienna Stock Exchange until 2006 and member of the supervisory board of Italian Finlombardia Bank. It gets better. Bank Medici was investment manager for Thema International Fund, which was invested by Bernie Madoff.
Lucky them.
Done. Yeah, see? Bank Medici, I told you I was going to bring it back to him. Bank Medici collected fees of 4.6 million euros for finding investors for Thema in 2007. Following news on January 2nd, 2009, that the bank lost over $3 billion invested in funds run by Madoff, the Austrian government appointed a supervisor to run the bank. On January 7th of 2009, so just 5 days later, the New York Times reported that some of the exposure to Madoff may have come from Russian oligarchs. It always boils down to the Russian oligarchs. Anyway, according to Austrian court records, U.S. prosecutors alleged that Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities LLC paid but did not disclose in U.S. dollars $32 million to Infavalier Inc., a company controlled by Sonia Cohn. The records also show that UK prosecutors alleged that Madoff Securities International paid but did not disclose GBP 7 million to Airco Inc., a company also controlled by Ms. Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
On May 28th of 2009, Bank Medici lost its Austrian banking license.
Not surprising.
Right. So some of the... we're going to be in our show notes, we're going to include some links that I used to source this information, but also some that I just thought was kind of fun for you to read up on if you're like me and a little bit of a history nerd and also want to learn more about this. So now moving on, there is a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. Well, we're going to be drilling down a bit further here to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources you can take to get you to that next level. Mm-hmm. So what are your recommendations?
Hire a CPA.
That's the first
Actually, hire a good tax preparer. It doesn't have to be a CPA, but that helps having that license there. And find somebody you trust and you feel good about asking questions to. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you are accountable for your own taxes. So mm-hmm. if they don't catch something, you don't ask about it. At the end of the day, you're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know that it is very, very, very tempting to do your own taxes when you first start because you're trying to save on that cost. And if you're small and you're H&R blocking it or TurboTaxing it, okay, you might be able to get, you know, away with something. But if you're making over 100K a year, I would say that you're better off hiring somebody to look over what you're doing. It's a smart thing to do.
Yeah. I would add that it would be best for you to know the difference between a bookkeeper, an accountant, and a CPA, and a tax preparer.
Yeah, they're not all the same.
Just know that there are differences. Hire
the right one.
If they were the same, they'd all have the same name. That's all I'm saying. but they're
different skill sets.
And if you're going to hire them from a firm because mm-hmm. most likely the firm that you're hiring them from will have the appropriate insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And also hire someone you feel like you could go out for coffee with.
Yeah, that's true. Coffee or beer.
Yeah, because I feel like the number one complaint that I hear from clients that come to us is that they're leaving whomever they're leaving,
mm-hmm.
mostly because they don't really hear anything from them. And they end up having to find out things secondhand or third hand. So you want to make sure you have a good relationship with all of the above. You might not need all of the above,
mm-hmm.
but recognize the differences between them so that you can also recognize who you need. And then when you go to pick somebody, make it somebody that you can have conversations with.
There are a lot of accountants out there, a lot of tax accountants out there. There's a lot. Mm-hmm. And not all of them are good.
Right.
It just is. It's just what happens, mm-hmm. right? There's a spectrum for everything and everybody. So you got to pick wisely and pick the one that you feel like is good.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly somebody you can talk to openly about.
Mm-hmm.
And most tax accountants they're not always very proactive because if you think about it, they usually have hundreds of clients that they prepare taxes for, but you want the one that you can pick up the phone and call and have a good conversation, ask questions to without feeling like you are the last priority on their list or you can't get a hold of them or you're stuck with some, you know, junior preparer who actually has no idea what you're talking about.
Well, so that was the other thing that I was going to mention is, especially this time of year, they're very busy. So don't take it personally if they're not responding to you quickly. I am really struggling with responding within a 24-hour period right now. It usually takes me about 2 days right now, whereas usually I respond same day. It's just the time of year for me. It's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's busy. However, be proactive about your books, but get to know what these terms mean. Get to know what it is to do them. Just because you know how to do them doesn't mean you should do them, but you should still know what those words mean. And to be able to ask questions like, hey, why does this look this way? Or can you explain this mm-hmm. to me? Because in the end, you need to know, it's just like visiting a doctor. You read WebMD, right? You go and you learn as much about your body. You spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on holistic yada yadas. You follow people on TikTok and Instagram. Well, you should be putting that same kind of effort into the money that's coming in and out of your company. And knowing what those terms are, it's just, you educate yourself.
Well, plan ahead. If you are one of those people right now, you're listening to this and you are now just starting or scrambling probably mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to put together whatever your tax accountant needs, or you're dreading April or March, depending on what business filings you need. That's not how it's supposed to happen.
Right.
The way it should happen and supposed to happen, and the good, you know, the people who are ahead of this, usually around September or October or November, they have all their books together.
Right.
They have it up to date. They have appointments with their tax accountant to go through and project where they're going to end up at the end of the year in terms of their tax preparation and tax liability, right? So your tax accountant can project that for you. So you know what you're looking at. And because it's before the end of the year, if you need to do anything like say, you know, maybe it's a little higher than you would like and you were holding off on purchasing something, put in a big investment or a big expense, you may know that, hey, you want to do it before the end of the year so that you can actually take, you know, take that against your liability this year. I mean, things like that, like you can't, there's things you can't do anymore once the year's done. Right. The IRS is like, yeah, you're done. Like you can't go back and change time. So that's what people get ahead of it. And that's what a lot of smart business owners are doing around the October, November timeframe. They're not waiting until February or March to talk to their accountant. Those are the ones are a little bit more newer to the game of the whole thing. So
exactly.
So, yeah.
Please join us for our next episode where we will discuss the true cost of payroll. I feel like the true cost at this point in my life is my livelihood, my life, my sanity.
Sanity.
That's what I'm feeling.
Sanity.
So stay tuned. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. And until next time, mind the business behind your small business, because all great successes start small. Bye.